It's been 4 days since they won PKs, and they just cleared YVR yesterday. God damn them all. I was told a cup of leagues would be easily sold as a world-class club tourney. They land in Lax with 36 sore knees. The first of Garber's big friendlies. When Everybody Wants to Rule the World is suddenly a song about how ruling the world is good and everyone should want to do it, it's not so MLS.
I do get the reference.
North American Soccer Podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton. Nick, how are you?
Hello. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. If you believe it, the previous... The eras of MLS have changed since the last time we saw. Because Leo Messi has debuted for the league. I mean, he hasn't. He's debuted for an MLS team.
It's a good point. He has debuted for his MLS team. He has not yet made his MLS debut.
It has been the League's Cup. The MLS branding is at an all-time high because we have the Leagues Cup and we have Messi happening at the same time. So there's just so much branding strategy, so much synergy.
It's a lot.
And honestly, this has been my experience a little bit. I watched the Whitecaps game, but my attention has been on the Women's World Cup. Like that.
Right.
The day to day, like what's going on in every match. Like that's the tournament I've been watching. And it's been fun. There's been some great games. Canada has had a roller coaster of a thing. Mm-hmm. But I think that we have a lot of tournament soccer all of a sudden. And most of it's pretty good.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a fair assessment.
I've now spent a little bit more time going back through. Let's talk a little bit about, I guess, what's been going on with the Women's World Cup first. Canada, I would say that Canada had a challenging open to the tournament. I'm reading Christine Sinclair's autobiography now. I'm reading it, so it's not an autobiography.
I was going to say.
And she talked about how former Canada women's team manager John Herdman would talk about a team developing through a tournament. And what I thought was interesting was that Canada had that opening draw against Nigeria. Mm-hmm. And then that first half against Ireland that they experienced was like not particularly fun for, it was a bad time.
Yes, to both points. I feel like for Canada, I mean, they were already a little rattled by Nigeria, and then 4 minutes in to be scored on off a corner, an Olympico, like, that's going to rattle you further, right? Like, not the start you would draw up for your redemption game.
Arsenal star McCabe hit that. That was wild. She did quite well in that. And I thought that was... It's a 50-50 because, obviously, whenever you're talking about the Republic of Ireland at an international tournament, the fans are so passionate. It's so great to see them have a team in the game, and they have been very exciting in the tournament. I've had good conversations with folks who are like, Vera Powell sucks, the former Houston Dash manager who is pretty unrepentant about allegations that she, at the very least, was like involved in bullying when she was. When she was involved with the Dash. But hey, you have to give it to what the Irish players have done so far. The team in that group, though, that you really have to give it to are Nigeria, who looks like they're going to win it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, they've been super strong. Yeah, it kind of feels like with Canada as ever, it's like, I think this is just true across all Canadian teams and all sports, is like we have to do things the hard way. We can't just come in and start confident. It's got to be like backs to the wall, do or die.
But then Canada ties it up at the end of the 45 minute. You go into that halftime thinking like, well, is this good or I feel so emotionally bad. Like there were moments in that where I'm like, this is a tournament where we fucked it.
Yeah.
But now, you know, the result goes the right way. And even at the halftime, Canada played much better in the second half.
Yeah. Yeah. And, Leon gets the goal to win it all. And I thought it was just a very smart, like playing between the center backs and then just perfectly timing your run and then nice strong boot through it to make sure it crosses the line. It felt like it really feels like with both our national teams, it's all confidence, right? Like if their minds are good going into it, then it seems to not be a problem. But it seems to take something to galvanize the team and get them all on the same page and in that mindset in order to do the damage. But when they do, they can, right?
Speaking of confidence, I think that one of the big discussion points is, you know, Canada's captain, Christine Sinclair, with the missed penalty in the 0-0 draw in the first game and then not starting in the second game. Ultimately, everything worked out. She came on as a substitute in the second game. Canada won the game. So it's not necessarily, I don't even know if we won't see her, or I don't even know if this means that she's not going to start in the next game either. But she played used that opportunity to make a full suite of substitutions at halftime.
Mm-hmm.
That included her and also Sophie Schmidt and Shalina Zdorsky. Is this something that you're reading into at all, or was this just the middle game in a group stage giving people a little rest?
Yeah, I think it's probably the latter. I mean, from what I've heard Bev Priestman say, she's like, I see penalties as 50-50, so you're going to score some and you're going to not score some. So I personally feel like across the game, people make way too big a deal out of missed penalties. Of course, it's Christine Sinclair, so yes, you'd expect that she sinks it. But I think also at play here is you have to rotate your squad. I think Christine Sinclair still plays at a level where people sort of forget her age as well. And that I think the only strategy here is we want the best version of our older players as we can get out of them. And that means we're going to have to rotate them.
Right.
I don't think gambling everything on we're going to play Sinclair 90 minutes every game to get through the group stage is a realistic approach. And so I see it more as like you're making the decisions based on the situation rather than some sort of like, oh, this is the opportunity to now like do a changing of the guard and,
right.
There's other players that are going to get their chance for sure. I don't think it's going to be a case of Sinclair sitting on the bench for the rest of the tournament.
No, not bench, but I just, after the issues that took place in the last World Cup, and again, this is kind of influenced a little bit by reading the book, like Sinclair is at her best when she can shut off, you know, the what people are saying outside of the arena, what you know, any idea of pressure, and just go and play her game and enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And clearly some of the issues that have cropped up around penalties like come from this idea of pressure, of like right. being everybody looking on her as like Canada's soccer hero and expected to deliver the goods. I'm not necessarily in asking like where you think things are going. I'm not necessarily being like, I know that there are some people who it's like, it's not necessarily like a notion of like, oh, this obviously shows this player is past it or something. Cause I don't think that's the case, no. But it's just like, confidence wise, is this going to be an issue for a player that does not want to be the center of attention, does not want to feel like a distraction in any ways?
Right. I think it has the potential to. I think given the second half against Ireland, if Canada can keep that moving forward, I mean, they were playing like a team that wins shit, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes they play like their backs are on fire and there's just the whole system of organization seems to break down. So I think it has that potential, but I think given the response that you see from the team and from, you know, the players that are maybe considered more to be substitutes, like that's all going to help her play her best. If those players couldn't step in and it was a case of we really actually need Sinclair to do this for us, I think that's maybe where we've seen some of that pressure not pay off, where every single thing is trying to run through Sinclair and you feel that kind of, you know, weight hanging over. I think this Canada side has shown they have the depth. It's just, do they all believe in it simultaneously to make it happen? But no, I don't know. I think Sinclair will be all right.
The I would say that the group stage so far has been a big part of it has just been the expansion and the number of teams that you don't see on this stage that often, and many of them making some pretty impressive showings, like the Republic of Ireland was mm-hmm. great. The Philippines beat New Zealand.
Yep.
Today you had Jamaica beating Panama with its first ever, I believe first ever World Cup win.
Mm-hmm.
Other than France versus Brazil today, which is very intriguing in terms of France beating Brazil 2-1, I would say there hasn't been like a massive amount of best on best matchups, but you have had some interesting scrapes, like you know, Australia Ireland 1-0, China Haiti 1-0, where it's just like you Netherlands getting a draw against the US, that was very interesting.
Sweden pummeling Italy 5-0.
That's just fun. And like, you know, some of the teams, this is very similar to any other, you know, international tournament, where it's like some of it is a measure of teams that are doing quite well, and then sometimes you got to look at you know, whether or not a team is has started the tournament on all cylinders you might expect them to. I think it will be massively interesting to see Canada Australia, because I think that Canada has to be feeling good going into it. But of course, it's a World Cup. The home team in a World Cup always does amazing, because they're lifted up by the supporters. But we've also had Canada, when Canada hosted the World Cup, there was a certain amount of pressure in moving towards the business end. So I think we've seen certain amount of like success for the home team, unless it happens to be that kind of tournament, and Australia will have the chance to demonstrate that. That is nerve-wracking for Canada, who, you know, obviously needs a result to go through. But I think that it's just the idea of a top class encounter. It'll just be exciting on Monday at 6 a.m. Atlantic time.
Yeah.
5 a.m. Eastern. That'll be pretty exciting to watch. I think that, like, a lot of the evolving themes of the tournament will, like, play themselves out a little bit more strongly in the knockout rounds.
Right.
Unless there's any, like, if Australia and New Zealand both do not go through, that will be a massive upset. If there is continued issues with any other team, and if a team like, you know, if a team sort of makes a shock qualification, that'll be big. But as of now, it feels like things are processing through, and we're going to see what the push comes to shove moments. Certainly Nigeria, Australia, Nigeria 3, Australia 2 feels like one of them.
Yeah, absolutely. Should be good. The soccer train rolls forward.
Dan, a little closer to home, and I will admit that I kind of feel awkward about the fact that MLS chose to put League's Cup. MLS, a league which never breaks for the Men's World Cup.
Yeah.
Broke for the Women's World Cup to put on its own tournament head-to-head. Like, there's just so much happening on some of these days. Like, especially because it was like the Messi game and a U.S. Women's National Team game were happening at the same time. It's like, that seems like it could have been avoided.
Probably. But, as you say, the Messi train has pulled into the MLS station, which just... Like, I mean, part of me is almost sort of loath to talk about it, because at this point, what's the news item to share? If you hadn't heard, but just the sort of the spectacle around it. Admittedly, I kind of had a moment where I was like, do I really want MLS to change? Like, is this going to kind of ruin the hokiness and just sort of like DIY chaos level of MLS that we've, the that's so MLS factor, if you will.
Right.
And then that fear was assuaged immediately by watching the special primetime event brought to you by Apple TV.
Oh my God.
The unveiling ceremony, which just, I honestly, like, I was like, I'm just going to take some notes to like share when we do the show next. And I just could not stop typing through the whole thing, because it was just from start to finish, such a clusterfuck. And I was like, never mind, I'm not worried anymore. It's still MLS.
There were so many elements. I think even just the fact that, like, it came so far after the news got broken was wild from the first place.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But what else really stuck out for you?
Okay, let me get my list out here.
Be just the list of that's MLS moments of the year right here in this.
Yeah, this, just the Messi unveiling has at least five. First of all, the number of times that they said, welcome to Miami, while fully aware that they are in Drive Pink Stadium in Fort Lauderdale, just so good. Right off the bat, to say welcoming you to the great city of Miami when you're not in Miami, the best.
Yes.
And it just kept repeating it, and every time my smile got broader. It was absolutely pouring rain, which is fine. That happens in MLS, of course. But they had built this long, like, fashion catwalk
out to the middle of the
pitch with this giant circular stage where I guess the unveiling was supposed to happen. And anyway, it all looked a little bit Star Wars, but because it was so pouring rain and so slippery, they had to bring the hosts basically right up to the beginning of this long catwalk right in front of the audience, which I think actually made it much more intimate and was probably just a better idea to begin with. But right away,
do you think,
like,
they would have had people on the field if they could have?
I mean, I don't know why they couldn't. It feels like building a slippery stage was maybe not the best. Like, I'd get if it was on ice, but I'm like, you can walk on that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe that's how badly Messi won't play on turf, is they had to actually build a stage. I don't know if Drive Pink is a turf field.
I think they must have worked on it.
So right away you're thinking, like, oh, someone's going to eat it on this catwalk. I think one of the more interesting things that happened is we didn't know that Sergio Busquets was going to be at this event and be unveiled as a part of this. So I think that that was kind of a, I think, a clever thing they were able to throw in there. And then they do the Messi finally comes out. They do their speeches. And then they play a message from celebrities, except it's like a video recorded message. And you can only hear, they had audio issues throughout the whole thing. And then for most of the video, there is no camera on the screen playing the video, nor any just like embedded video in the feed of the broadcast.
No.
And you can't hear it because they don't even have the audio piped in. So you just hear like a sort of echoey Steph Curry being like, welcome to the USA. It was just like, this is fucking perfect. Like, there's literally no point in getting anybody famous to be on this video because no one saw it. Anyway, it was great. I loved the entire thing. It made me so happy. It was well worth the watch. And boy, Apple TV has some work to do to figure out their broadcasts.
Here are some notes that I took from that. I also enjoyed, as I noted, that the song that they play as his introduction song is a rap song that was made by Little Baby for the 2022 Qatar World Cup. Called The World Is Yours to Take, which is built on a sample of Tears for Fears' Everybody Wants to Rule the World. And then the revamped, they play the normal hook of the song, and it's like, I want to rule the world. I want to rule the world. And it's like, okay, well, you do, does this singer and Jorge Mas and MLS and Lionel Messi think that in the song, everybody wants to rule the world, that ruling the world is a cool thing that people should want to do. Do they think that that's
judging by how greedily David Beckham was rubbing his hands during Messi's first goal in League's Cup, I think they do think it's
a good thing. I also appreciate in Jorge Mas's speech where he says, Lionel Messi has a legacy that started at Newell's Old Boys. It didn't. That started at Newell's Old Boys and ended at Paris Saint-Germain, and now he's here.
yeah. Like, he has a legacy that has ended, which actually, that's how most people find themselves in Florida, is it not? Had a long and happy career, had his legacy, retired, and then came here. Very Florida.
Yeah.
I
kind of think that, to me, the Messi experience, as we have lived it so far, has come in three segments. One, the sort of the pre-release hype of this press conference and all of the rush of media about it and you know, his appearance at Publix and everybody wondering what this is going to look like. Then sort of the rubber hitting the road aspect of that game against Cruz Azul. He comes on in the second half. Miami gets scored on, and his first major look is to be panned to from the camera to go, whoa. And then in stoppage time, he hits a free kick. The free kick goes in. Everybody loses their mind. It's a more timely but slightly less impressive version of the Zlatan Ibrahimovic stunner on his debut. In that it's a free kick. I mean, like, it was a really nice looking free kick, but I'm just saying that goal was like, you know, an all timer.
If we're judging a legends, maybe slightly past their prime coming to MLS and making a big statement opening goal, you're saying Zlatan still wins.
I think even though the timing around it, and I appreciate it, you know, there were so many people that were posting like, oh, you couldn't have scripted. And I was just like, Oh, I'm so tired of these scripted sports because I'm a big wrestling fan.
Okay, but to that point, my partner was watching this with me, and she was like, she called that free kick a little dubious. And they're like, how badly did they want this guy to score? And at some point she was like, is this scripted? And then for the next week, every single story about Messi is, they couldn't have written a better script. And you're like giving Messi a penalty or a free kick right in the dying seconds of a game. Yeah, you're right. You couldn't have written a better script. Not that I think it was all that dubious or anything. It just, it's funny when it's like they can't stop saying the thing that you're like, maybe just find a different way to introduce this as like, what an amazing goal. Gets it the same points across. Luck.
Like it was a good free kick goal. I would say that there were better goals scored the weekend, and like you know, I don't think that it looks like a peak Javinko goal, free kick goal, which is my gold standard for MLS free kick goals.
I mean, I think it's a very good free kick. I just think it's also like, it's messy, right? Like as soon as they call the whistle blows, you're like, he's fucking having that. Like, and he does. Doesn't make it less impressive.
Then he scores twice. The Atlanta game happens. He's quite good in it. Great partnership with the, with his pal there. I have it written down. Taylor. Robert Taylor.
Taylor, who
looks great, you know, and it's kind of funny that he scores and everybody is like, doesn't he love playing with Messi? Well, okay, he did get supplied with the cards. Miami steamrolls over Atlanta 4-0. And I think that like immediately, so like that ends stage two, which is it's the introduction of Messi in his first two games. There is no immediate waiting for production from him. He's scoring a bunch of goals. Now, it's like the weirdness. I feel like we're in the weird zone, and we will probably still be in the weird zone until after the League Cup, where it's like people are trying to decide whether or not they should be impressed by this, because it's like I understand the Athletic is trying to, in any, you know, publication is trying to serve, that covers MLS, is trying to serve like a much mass, like a bigger market now of people. The demand for information about MLS has gone up huge. There's no doubt about it. But like you score and some of the things that pop up, you look and some of the things that pop up are like articles titled, when is Lionel Messi's next match? Is Messi really good or is MLS defending really bad? And this is a title on the Athletic front page. And this is not, they're not the only people that I've heard people be like, okay, well, he scored three goals in his first two games. Is that a bad thing? And it's like, I also appreciate people judging MLS harshly from it when one of the teams was, one of those teams, those two games was not an MLS team.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think we both kind of have the same thing where like at a certain point, hype is really the issue versus the actual player or their performance. It's just the sheer amount of fucking messy content hose that's pointed at your face every day. I mean, on any given day, MLSsoccer.com has five messy stories as the top news stories, often with the same photo. It's just, it's a lot. I kind of want to maybe leave that question dangling and just do a little bit of analysis as a way of slightly answering that, if it was a question, I guess. But people keep being like, well, Inter Miami is only 12 points off the playoff line. It's like, well, that's true. But also, like, there are other teams above them. And, like, all, like, 14 other teams above them. So it's not just about Inter Miami winning games when MLS restarts. They really have a mountain to climb. And take nothing away from Messi or Busquets or Alba whenever he appears, but just a sort of caveat to what needs to happen in MLS land when we get back to it is that last year in the Eastern Conference with one less team, it took 48 points to make the playoffs. Right now, Miami has 18. So that's at least 10 wins with 12 games left, plus a lot of opponents dropping points as well. Now, that would, if they could win 10 of those games, then obviously some of those opponents would be dropping points. It's just that, like, the math of it, I'm like, I mean, if anybody could make it happen, it would be those three Barcelona lads. But it is a mountain to climb, and we are going to get so much silly season analysis until deadline day, whether Inter Miami is in or out. And yet I still think it's not going to tell us much about the Inter Miami team and project this season. You know, like, because even if they do make the playoffs, then they have the actual playoffs to contend with, which they don't have any experience doing. And did they make the playoffs last year?
Maybe they did like a first round exit.
I can't remember. Somebody fact check me on that. But my point is, it's a long way to go. All of their star signings are 35 plus. Some may or may not play on turf, and they need to win 10 games. Like, this idea that they're only 12 points off, I'm like, that's not quite true, because that line is going to move. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I don't doubt the impact. I mean, I count myself as a Messi fan. I think it's hard to be a fan of soccer and not be, but oh my God, it is an awful lot. And, you know, to the Atlanta point, I mean, it did help that on both of Messi's goals, literally nobody was marking him. So, you know, MLS defending is definitely going to help, but there was acres of space and time for him to make his impact in that game.
I have it, by the way. Miami lost the first round of the playoffs last year, 3-0 to New York City.
Right. Okay. As I said it, I was like, I feel like I remember
your point about Atlanta. This was the other thought I kind of had a little bit when it came to like the idea of all rigged. I don't think it's rigged, but when you look at a player like this, there has been levels of hype in MLS before, and like levels of like MLS obviously has an interest in this player or these teams doing well. But I think that this is a step above where things have been at previously, because it's like, you know, Messi has a cut of the Apple money. Messi has a cut of the Fanatics money. Like for in the MLS closed system, it kind of feels to it. And actually, I guess this is true. Messi has there. They, I remember it being suggested that those two things are true, and he's getting an ownership stake. So it's like, in a sense, you've got the league governors and you have Messi almost on equal, you know, foot on like he's a voice at that table, to a certain degree. And yeah, when I think of like, you know, Messi bearing down on Brad Guzan in a one-on-one, how awful it must be in that situation to be the person tasked to be on a, not only to be tasked on a one-on-one with like the greatest person, perhaps the greatest man to play the sport, perhaps, overall. And then also think like all of my bosses and all of their bosses are hoping I fuck up. Like everybody, the combined salaries. If you're in a one-on-one with Messi, you just have to be thinking the combined salaries of all the people who hope that I fucking bite it on this play are huge. Yeah. And that must just be hard. That's just hard. You are looking at one of the bosses. So how do you manage that as a player? I guess.
I feel like Brad Guzan's using that to his advantage, but it
Guzan,
didn't work.
Yeah,
in
no,
this
I don't
game.
Think that Guzan Guzan's no Wilton no, Mila, no. But I just in that.
I knew that wasn't a pot shot at him. I just meant that him specifically, he's probably fine with it. Like, he wants to stop that. But no, I get it. Like, yeah, that's the thing, too, is like, even just on a humans being humans level, you know, referees of games, like, even again, that free kick that he won, I'm like, yeah, sure, I'm fine with it being called a free kick, but it's, you know, maybe a little on the soft side of fouls. The clock is going into extra time. You're like, oh, they really are making sure that this play is allowed to happen. It's less so about that game. It just makes you immediately aware of situations we're going to be in when MLS returns where, yeah, maybe if it's different teams, different players, the ref is like, fuck, this game is over, blowing the whistle, versus Messi's on the pitch. So maybe we just... maybe 15 more seconds on the clock just to see if he's got one more moment of magic in him.
And that's not unprecedented in the world of football.
No, of course not. And that's like, I really don't see that as like a conspiracy that we need to be watching out for. I just think like that will all be part of the influence, right? Like you say, the project is predicated on him succeeding. I mean, at the same time, I think Messi could not play another game in MLS for the rest of the season, play a couple next year, and the impact would be just as big. Like, the impact has been made already. Him continuing to be Messi, doing Messi things, is just the icing on the cake. But let's be real. He could be shit, and the same attention is going to be there.
He's in the shirt now. That's a big difference.
They've got the team photos updated.
I was going to say my other big point with him, and this goes to your notes about Miami, what Miami has to look for as a project. Between the articles about when Lionel Messi plays his next game on The Athletic, sorry to The Athletic, I'm not meaning this to be a big dunk. There's a great story by Paul Tenorio and Tom Bogert who say who are reporting on the idea of MLS owners talking about whether or not like there needs to be significant changes to the roster system in the way that salaries are regulated in MLS. It will not shock you that Jorge Mas is right there at the top of the story saying we have got to, we all want the league to grow. Evolution is likely. Because this is the issue when you see MLS teams against Mexico teams from any league where there is not as much regulation. It's that MLS's structure has allowed you to buy top level players. It has sometimes led to people undervaluing defenders or undervaluing sort of the middle chunk of your team, and. Mm-hmm. Many of those big ticket buys have not, it's not necessarily a cruise control to success as a club to just load up three of the most expensive DPs that you can find at any given point in time. That mm-hmm. to me, that's a positive of the league. That's, yeah. That's one of the things that makes it interesting and fun to watch. But, there is some discussion, and I kind of agree about what to do with in the story about what to do to try and harness some of this momentum the impact that you identify. The owner of the Chicago Fire said that you'd love to see the rules more decentralized so that you know you could spend money up and down the roster. You do have the owner of the Crew, J.W. Johnson, saying a hard cap is important, but let's add good players. There is a product strategy committee that is chaired by Clark Hunt of Dallas and Greg Kerfoot of Vancouver, which I find it interesting that old Greg is right there at the top of this this conversation of what we should spend on players, because the Whitecaps have at times looked like they are not at the forefront of spending, but then in recent years the tanks have opened up a little more, and I think mm-hmm. that has had success at the Whitecaps.
You mean the El Tanques.
A lot of teams go through this, right? Toronto went through it, too. Yeah. You sink.
Toronto's going through it.
Back again.
Toronto's
Toronto
in it.
Toronto forgot all the lessons it learned.
Sure did. Sure did.
With the bloody big deal. And then is right back in it. I would say that the Whitecaps are, I can't believe I'm saying these words when they come to Toronto, like a more, much, much more than in past years, a better example of a more balanced squad that has some top level players and also, you know, a strong, you know, midfield core and like has looked both at the idea of top level performing players and also younger prospects.
I agree.
So it will be interesting to see what that picture looks like. I would say that like the likelihood of a massive change to the way that designated players and TAM and GAM is structured is not necessarily in the works, but at the same time, I would love to say to maybe see the Caps like all go up and just have the same, something similar to the same structure, but just with a little more wiggle room.
Yeah. I mean, I think my thing is like, if it helps all the teams and all teams are equally able to take advantage of it, then great. It's just, I worry sometimes when the people pushing for things like this are often the teams who are already spending eye-watering money, because that's what makes MLS so great, is that the parity, the cap means that there is a bit of parity and it's not guaranteed year to year. It's why I think a lot of people tend to gravitate towards MLS, is because on any given year, your team can be in it. I feel like, I mean, why don't they just add like an extra DP, but it has to be a defender?
Designated?
Couldn't that be a thing?
A DD, a designated defender.
Designated. I'll be your DD tonight. My name is Matt Hedges, and I will be taking you to your destination. Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I mean, again, I think the impact is already been felt, and there's going to be a lot of different ideas floated around, but it's going to be silly season for a while as people just acclimatize to all of a sudden having the world's best player in their league. And as other teams try to also do something with that, right? Like make their own moves. I'll definitely say this for the impact, like on the field too, with Inter Miami, right away, you can see that like, obviously if you're a player, especially a younger player and your new teammate is fucking Messi, like you're going out there with something to prove. And you see a lot more swagger and just sort of like fire under the bums of Inter Miami's players across the charts right now. So in terms of like what I'm waiting to see for Inter Miami is, can all of that momentum keep them going? We know what Messi will do. We know what the additions to Inter Miami will bring. They've also radically overhauled their team in the middle of the season. Now, given how bad they've been, I don't think that's the bad thing to do. But it is still going to take a squad of 21 or 22 players to get them into the playoffs and do something. And I'm interested to see, can the whole team keep riding that wave when they're really tested? When, you know, they're playing Cincinnati.
Who's going to be the Alan Gordon of this story?
Exactly.
The forward who played for the LA Galaxy and who I think is like one of like the best characters in Grant Wall's The Beckham Experiment book. A lot of one of the ways that North American people try to understand the global the global impact of soccer is to suggest that in other countries, they see soccer like a religion, you know, and there's always an othering in that, right? They see soccer as a religion. But I think that in the way that soccer is global now and that people who, you know, care about and and live and die by football are in every city and in every, you know, precinct. God walks among us at this time.
Yeah.
And I think that you're seeing people people of all sporting disciplines turn their head because of that. And whether that has a positive or a negative, you will see, or whether that necessarily means that they'll win. It's like the circus is in town.
Yes. Yeah, there's immediately a lot more eyes on the league, for sure. And, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. And as we've already seen, the chaos factor seems to be alive and well. So I don't think we need to worry too much about...
Let's talk about...
MLS's character changing anytime soon.
Let's talk about Don Garber's other big executive strategy item. in the League's Cup tournament.
Yes.
Which started with that match, but has now almost all of two match days have played through. I have some thoughts. How do you feel about it?
One of the points you already made, it's weird that it's happening simultaneously with the Women's World Cup. I like the tournament so far. I think given that we've seen some MLS and Liga MX teams play each other already a bit this season, it's a little confusing that, like, okay, now forget all of that, completely different, start again. So many teams, a ton of soccer. I've enjoyed it. I think it's a good format. I like the there's no draws. You got to win it in penalties, and you still get a point if you lose in penalties. I think there's been some really good matches. I think you've seen a couple of Liga MX sides humbled. I think you've seen a couple of MLS sides humbled as well. Overall, I've had fun. I like it. And the focus has been on the football. There's been some good testy matches. But nothing that's kind of gotten into, like, I feel like the rivalry is sort of there underneath things. But you're still seeing, you know, MLS sides beat MLS sides and a good amount of rivalry there. So it's been good. Overall, I'm like, yeah, I've enjoyed it. Is it a product I think I need to consume every year? No, not really.
I agree with you that I have been, again, with the wrestling metaphor, I have been sports entertained by this. It has felt weird to me in a way of, like, is this... I joked in trying to write a Barrett's Privateers parody based on Leon's airport adventure that these... that these were Garber's big friendlies. And, like,
oh, yeah.
This is God damn them all. I was told the cup of leagues would be easily sold as a world class club tourney. They land in Lex with 36 sore knees. The first of Garber's big friendlies.
How is this not the opener?
It's been four days since they won PKs and they just cleared YVR yesterday. That's the element of, like,
wow,
that I enjoyed that.
So good.
That whole thing of them having to wait at an airport was wild. They had to, like, move all the games around. And, like, is this note is for the MLS teams? It has felt decidedly non-canon because, you know, everything in MLS is based around getting to the playoffs and where you're at with the playoffs, and this just doesn't have to do anything. There isn't anything with that. I understand why people like the shootout. It, from what I have been accustomed to what I have been conditioned for, it is weird to me that you have a shootout, you lose the shootout, and then you go to work again later that week. You know? Like, to me, a shootout in soccer is a
is like a final statement that you're out.
If you lose, you're done in the competition. You go back to whatever league you were in or whatever. It's just so wild to me to use, you know.
Go back to whatever league you came from. You're done.
The Whitecaps and Leon had an amazing game to start the both of their League's Cups campaigns. I also have no time for the announcers saying that so-and-so or such team has a League's Cup debut. This is the first real year. There were games last year that were called the League's Cup. This is the first full League's Cup tournament. Everyone is making their debut in every game. We don't need to say it anymore.
I know. The broken recordness of MLS announcers is just next level. Like,
I have more on this topic.
I know we give Taylor Twellman guff for that, but it's just like, can you broaden your vocabulary and your catchphrases just a bit? Like, for those of us that have to watch a lot of soccer, you do notice when you say the same shit 16 times in every game.
And yet they can't get Yohei Takaoka's name correct.
Yeah, truly. There's things to work on, boys. Lots to practice.
They did 19 rounds of penalties, and I swear to God, they went through 10 of them before somebody was like, his name doesn't end with Ta. And like, because I've been there, I understand that if you make a decision, you've got to stick with your decision. So he's made his decision. He's stuck with his decision. And his color commentator is like, well, I've got to say that. because that's what we have to go with. But presumably they all have a piece of paper. I didn't know when one of them was going to see the back of his jersey and be like, oh, that's not his name. Anyways.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like also it's not like you can't Google shit while you're doing the mat. Like, you know,
it's tough.
You're not so busy that you can't just be like, what is this guy's name?
I've been there to a certain degree as a PA announcer. So like,
yeah,
I understand that you have to make calls sometimes like that, but it's just when it's not correct and the fans, that's the nightmare moment is when everyone is, you know, and I've had that as an announcer where you,
especially when there's 19 PKs and you're going to get a lot of chances to say it.
When you're 90% sure of something and you say something and then you make an announcement and then you sort of like do a scan of faces to be like, all right, is somebody gonna pull a face like, what the fuck is he saying? And they don't. It's like, okay, we're good. I figured it out. I get that. That was an amazing time. That was a great shootout. The game was really fun and well played by both teams. It felt like a high level, you know, interleague match. The circumstances of getting all the way to the penalty, the goalkeepers, and then looping around was like super. This is always going to be one of the things that will be memorable to both teams this season. And like any penalty kicks, you lose, and then you think, well, what can you say? There were 19 rounds of penalty kicks.
I mean, even I saw the post-match with Sartini and he just kind of laughed. He's like, I mean, what are you gonna do? Like, someone's gotta at that point flip a coin, someone's gotta win.
And for that to be, for all of that importance to be focused in, and then to say this was the first game of a group stage, that's, I don't love that. I think it makes the games feel weird to me. It makes the games feel more non-canon to me. That being said,
I guess so. Yeah.
Sorry. What were you?
No. Go ahead.
I was also going to say, I have to admit, however, there have been like 50 red cards, and you don't get that many red cards in friendlies. So I can't.
You sure don't.
I can't 100% be like, oh, this is friendlies. It's non-canon. The weather's hot. The tempers are hot. The action is hot.
It's competitive. It's competitive for sure. There's been some spicy ones. Just while we're on the point of the Whitecaps and Leagues Cup, they play Galaxy next, who lost to Leon. So it's there for the Whitecaps to potentially go through. An interesting point I read about this morning is that Brugman for LA Galaxy is out with a meniscus tear. No word yet on whether it's super serious or not, but he sure is not going to be playing in that last game between Vancouver and Galaxy. And Galaxy had their moments against Leon, but I watched the whole game, and it looked pretty comfortably Leon still. So it's there for Vancouver. And, of course, they hammered the Galaxy 4-2 right before the break, so hopefully they can repeat it down in Carson, California. What else has stood out to you about this match? I mean, I know there's been a ton of games, but any teams or any matches that kind of have caught your attention?
Let me call out some for you.
Okay.
You had Dallas Charlotte, which was a 2-2 match that had a disallowed. We thought we had a goal from our field that was disallowed from offside, and had a stoppage time equalizer from Ben Bender going to penalties.
Yep.
That was wild. I appreciate. I thought Montreal played great in the draw against Pumas, where they won on penalties as well. Mm-hmm. Jonathan Sirois, the legend, with the penalty save.
Oh, so good.
I thought that Cincinnati Sporting Kansas City was another match that had a lot of back and forth. Alan Pulido headbutt.
Alan Pulido headbutt. Oh my God! The headline there. I almost sent you a message because I was watching that game and I was like, just going to do one of those, like, tell me when you get to the Cincinnati SKC highlights. And then I totally forgot about it until you brought it up again today.
Oh my God. That game was, we had an own goal from a defender. We had Alan Pulido doing a full on headbutt. And we discussed, you know, I'm watching New Japan Pro Wrestling's G1 Climax. They had a match where there was a similar, it's not a Zinedine Zidane, you know, standing headbutt to the chest. It's a diving headbutt, forehead to forehead, like Tomohiro Ishii in the G1. For people that want, that's the reference for anybody that knows this man. That was wild.
In the 30th minute.
In the 30th minute. You had another shot in off the crossbar. You had a late on penalty. You had a second late on penalty.
You had a literally like the 98th minute penalty. And then it goes to penalties because that was the Acosta's penalty was the one that drew it level, I believe. It was a lot.
That was so much.
That was a very MLS match.
Yes.
That's
so League's Cup. That was great. You had oops, Toronto got lit up 5-0, and now people are unhappy as though it is the bad old days in Toronto. It's kind of bad. Pretty bad.
It's pretty bad. I don't know why this performance in particular makes you all of a sudden realize how bad things are. In the last match I saw, Bernadeschi was subbed off, I think, at the half. And, like, I think his goose is cooked at TFC. I think they're probably already shopping him around. He just does not look like he wants to be there. Speaking of players on big money signings.
Yeah.
One that stood out to me was RSL 3, Seattle 0. RSL was also playing a man down for a significant amount of time. And yet they still looked thoroughly in control. And Seattle, Dick, just doesn't make any sense to me right now. Like when you see the results, you're like, oh, well, I assume probably they had like a bunch of younger guys starting and were missing some key players. And you're like, nope, that's like one of the strongest starting lineups they've had all season. Jeez. Did not matter. Although I'm pretty sure RSL got smoked in their next match, if I'm remembering correctly.
Which is almost worse for Seattle. If they can say, oh.
It is, yeah. Monterrey beat them 3-0. So Seattle's got some work to do there. And then another one that stood out to me is America just pummeling St. Louis. St. Louis is the only team that has been eliminated so far from the tournament in very short order, which is somewhat surprising. They've struggled in MLS as of late, but they've got some key players back from injury. Did not matter. This was one where the Liga MX gap was there for all to see, and they made short work of St. Louis in that group.
I think it's been that's definitely one of the things to look at and think about with this. I think that there has been, like, on the scale, obviously, when we talk about MLS versus when we talk about MLS versus Mexico, we very rarely get the opportunity to talk about every MLS team versus every Mexican team. Like, we're usually talking about the best teams in MLS versus the best teams in Mexico. And on that scale, until very recently, like, the number of MLS wins against Mexico, Liga MX teams was, like, you know, you could hold in the palm of one hand. So the amount of wins that have been in this tournament against not insignificant teams are quite impressive. There are some of the ones that I the other ones I was looking at, Houston versus Santos was a 2-2. You had Griffin Dorsey with a break down the outside, cuts in, shoots to the top of the box to get the second. Santos then comes back and is able to equalize with the help of a penalty. But then it's like that was almost perfect penalty shootout, and then the Santos striker missed their fifth penalty. So that was a slick win for Houston there. Philadelphia beat Querétaro 5-1. I didn't see it. Was our old friend Camilo Sanvezo in that game?
So, yeah, I just happened to have done a bit of a deep dive on him before this game. And so I decided to watch it, and I believe he played most of it. It took I'm mixing games up. I saw about 20 minutes of this game, and I think it took 18 minutes of those 20 minutes to see Sanvezo touch the ball. So... It was nice to see an old familiar face in Camilo Sanvezo. Apparently, he has also become Carretero's all-time leading scorer. So he's done all right for himself. He's apparently been quite good. He's now 35. But always interesting to see the old Whitecap name pop, Whitecap's names pop up here and there. Another one that stood out to me was DC United getting a late win through who else? Eric Hurtado.
Eric Hurtado. Looking like a guy who hasn't taken his vaccines in a minute. I don't know. He gives me bad vibes now. I was once a proud visitor of Hurtado Island. No more.
Now you're it's a bit of a question mark, but other teams that have stood out to me, Philadelphia, obviously, I think you mentioned already, has been great. Inter Miami, there's no denying their performances. Tigres, of course, look very strong. Club America.
I loved that Tigres Portland match. It was 2-1 for Tigres. That was really fun.
Yeah, and that was another, like, kind of had everything. Evander's amazing free kick and then sent off. It's just like that. I feel like that's the MLS/Leagues Cup. Like, I don't know what the holy trifecta is. Like a. It's probably a goal, a penalty, and then a sending off. So he got two of those anyway off his bingo card. But lots of action.
I saw one post from the account that's like the unfortunate MLS events where that usually logs times when people say or do things braggadociously that then blow up in their face. And I saw somebody quoted saying that Cincinnati and Chivas was going to be a one versus one, like a first place versus first place. And Chivas was going to dog walk Cincinnati. That's not how that went on Guadalajara on Chivas' great return to MLS after after Chivas USA folded. The Brandon Vasquez hat trick with two goals in the first 10 minutes, and then before the end of the first half, Chivas player gets sent off, Sepulveda. And then they trade goals in the second, but it's Cincinnati 3-1. I found this to be a pretty exciting one.
Absolutely. Also played over 2 days because of weather delays.
Yeah, so that was also striking me weird that it was like, we got a weather delay, and they came back, there's nobody in the stands, and it's bright out.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, that one was a bit of a surprise. Obviously, it's hard to maintain a momentum over a game that takes 2 days, but that's just as true for both sides. Interestingly, Chivas Guadalajara is the only Mexican team whose stadium I've been in.
Oh, is that true? How did you like it?
It's excellent. The people in Guadalajara call it the toilet bowl for slang, because it's kind of what it looks like, which I really enjoyed. Massive stadium. Easily the biggest stadium I've ever been in. I know there's many bigger than it, but it's pretty enormous. I think, from what I recall, they were playing an exhibition match when I went. But definitely, soccer bucket list top 10 moment is being inside their stadium. TQL is next on my list, I guess, now.
I loved, I had an angry tweet today. I had to roll it back once I realized what was happening, but it was like, why for the first three Leagues Cup matches I saw all had the away team listed second. And I was like, You motherfuckers better not have tried to fix it to be more American sportsy just because Messi's here now. Mm. But no, I guess it's some legality around, I guess it's some like idea around like Liga MX teams are not hosting matches in this tournament, which is weird when you start to think about it. I haven't read anything as to why this is, but I would assume that it's like there were seeded MLS teams and seeded Liga MX teams, and then there was everyone else. So I think that it was like a scenario where if you were one of the seeded Liga MX teams, you're one of the home teams, and like Vancouver is not formally hosting a game because Vancouver was the away team in the Vancouver Leon match. It just happened to be played at BC Place. Best place to put it. And there was the games like
folks,
this.
If you're feeling confused, don't worry. Like, I understood everything you said, but also I went a little cross-eyed as you explained.
In soccer games, there are some small advantages that you could get. If you are the home team, who kicks first, who gets to take the kickoff at in the first half and stuff like that. There are a few like things that are just the home team does them, which
like when the Whitecaps played out of Rio Tinto.
That's right. Even if it's not your own stadium, there are some small benefits. And I guess like having your name first on the Chiron is one of them. Even if you're in a stadium with the team whose stadium it is, they're the away team somehow. But the Cincinnati game was one of those. I also thought that the Nashville Toluca was a raucous game. Walker Zimmerman third minute header. Fafa Biko really should not have hit Hani Mukhtar wide open and was under pressure and decided to shoot anyway, but he scored, so it's fine. Nashville is down 4-2, scores a goal to make it 3-4, and you'd think, oh man, these guys are mounting a comeback, and then Teal Bunbury gets sent off for screaming at the referee.
Yeah,
that's a lot. That's just a lot of happenings to happen all at once.
Certainly a lot of happenings to happen all at once. It's overall, it's been a good tournament. It's definitely starting to, I think, reach my brain in oversaturation mode. But I can't help, of course, because believe it or not, folks, this is a podcast about MLS. Kind of turning my attention to what comes after all of this, because it's all exciting and interesting to watch. But in terms of MLS, and certainly most of the storylines around this show, it doesn't really matter. So as we look ahead and as we wrap things up here, I think it's August 20th that MLS is back in action. And we're, I think, just slightly past the halfway point.
Conveniently, what the day of the Women's World Cup final, by the way.
Right. Yeah. There we go. What for you is something that that you're thinking about for the second half of the season? Who are the clubs that you're kind of like? What is my question here? I think my question is, who are the clubs that you think have something to prove, who could prove it? As we come up to MLS restarting,
I think that
the club's on the edge.
With the idea of something to prove, certainly with the idea that St. Louis is already out, they will this be a benefit for them in their attempt to remain at the top of the Western Conference in that they have a break? Like are certain teams thinking that if they don't qualify for the turn, if they play their one game this weekend and don't make it, that maybe that's not the worst thing in the world because they could take a little breaky break? Or are they thinking, or do you want to play through because you want to keep your form straight? It'll be interesting to see how that affects St. Louis. I think that one of the things, that some of the storylines that I have bookmarked in my brain are, seeing what happens with the collapse, the collapse or otherwise of Toronto. Whether or not there are any further consequences, because we also had some movement involving.
We had a lot of movement.
Didn't we have Matt Hedges going to Austin FC?
We did.
While we're still waiting for the window to close, I guess the one of the other big, one of the other, it's not really like a sports story, but Taxi Fontes is suspended at DC over an investigation into the notion that he did a racial slur at his own teammate during a game on July 15th.
Has this not already happened once?
It has already happened once. He's definitely on his second yellow regarding that. Not that there should be a yellow, but. But there has been an issue. There was an issue previously involving this player. And, like, that's what, I really had my eye open when I saw that, like, there's a DC supporters group that are saying, get him out of here. Because obviously
he's an
important player to them. But you that's what has to happen. It has to be a zero tolerance situation. It is. How exactly to manage it and how to, manage accountability for a player, like, is always something that happens, always something that you have to deal with because, DC is the team where I want to make sure I actually get this point right before I say it, but, sometimes people can say things and then get fired and then go on to other teams and it's like, well, that's fine because they learned their lesson or because they faced consequences. That seemed to be people's opinions about Lee Wynn when the Whitecaps, had that come to an end. He went on to have a career. This is a little bit different situation. This is not a Twitter situation. This is something that was said on the field and it involves something like the Lee Wynn situation, which involved homophobia, it involves something that you can't do and cannot be supported. It's super bizarre that it's the second time. It's super bizarre that it involves a teammate. It's super bizarre that it involves like one of the team's top stars. And I'm sure that this is not, what they want to be looking or thinking about, but I'm heartened to see the call from action from DC supporters on this.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like, I don't know exactly whose call it is at the end of the day, but I don't see Rooney standing for that for long on the team. Yeah, gross. Don't like it. Get him out of there.
Other player movement. Mm-hmm. There was one that involved the Whitecaps.
I hate it. Yeah, this one pained me, and I missed it. It was like the day or two after, I was like, I'm sorry, excuse me? Julian Gressel to Columbus? And then once the news story kind of broke out and there's a little bit more detail, it was sort of like, because of the way that DC decided to yeet Gressel without his knowledge, Vancouver apparently kind of knew that this was a somewhat precarious contract they'd be picking up, but were like, it's worth it to get him to play here, but we could potentially lose him for free. And so this option came up that Gressel wanted to be a little closer to family. Columbus was willing to pay $800,000 in GAM, roughly. So it worked for everybody. I would much rather have Julian Gressel just playing for the Vancouver Whitecaps. Yeah. That's my hot take. But at least he had nice things to say about the Whitecaps upon his leaving. Hopefully he meant those things and it wasn't part of his severance package. But obviously we wish him well. I think it's a decent amount of money, and if the contract was the way that it is, I understand why it makes sense to lose a player earlier and get something for him versus slightly later and have the player upset that you won't let him go and also get nothing for it. Like,
nope.
If you're in that situation, yeah, you want to get some money for him. Obviously, my brain just goes to, like, is this going to be something where the Whitecaps are like, oh, yeah, we've got depth, we're fine. Because I'm totally impressed with the depth of our squad, and we've seen lots of debuts from younger players coming up and doing really well. But I still would love to see some of that money put to use before that transfer window closes. Like,
it's weird,
you know. And it doesn't have to be Gressel. I was heartened to see. I think it was Axel Schuster who said we're probably not looking for a Gressel replacement, but we're probably looking for two players who can immediately improve our squad with that money. And I'm like, I'm fine with that. Just don't sit on that cash.
Immediate is the word. I like you.
We love immediate.
Like you, I would have preferred to see something concrete than money. But nobody ever asked Julian Gressel if he wanted to go to Vancouver, and I never felt as a fan that he provided any less than the maximum amount of effort. In a place where he might not have wanted to be. He might not have said he wanted to go if anybody had asked him. But he was a great player for the team. I loved having him play for the team. At the end of the day, if that is how it has to work to make everyone happy, I understand these were just odd circumstances. I wish him the best. I hear that the Whitecaps, who, let's also note, the Whitecaps have had their own personnel issues in the past around notifying players of trades. The Alain Rochat traded by phone situation, it constantly sticks in my craw. But the Whitecaps, apparently, when they realized they were in this position, they got this offer that they liked. They apparently did their, I had seen it said that they brought him in on it and they let him, you know, have his input on it before they accepted the offer. So,
yeah, I think that's right that they did right by the player, and not like that is most important, but the fact that it's also Columbus and it's not like RSL or Minnesota or another like sort of similarly placed rival in the Western Conference. I'm like, if it's got to happen, send him to the Eastern Conference, like, because, yeah, that would have stung a lot more if, like, the next, you know, August 20th we're playing whoever and he's going against us. Yeah, but unfortunate.
Through to your point about, like, what like, you know, any other, like, bookmarks that I have on various teams. I was I was interested in continue to be interested in which teams are on good form and which ones aren't. This could be an opportunity for, you know, a Kansas City to get on better form or what have you. I think that the three biggest thing impacts that this tournament can have on the regular season are who goes out early, who mm-hmm. goes the distance, and what does going the distance mean to them mentally? Because ultimately, none of this is canon to MLS, but the memories, it's like a fantasy movie.
The memories will last a lifetime.
It's like a fantasy movie. This is the never-ending story where you go to the fantasy yeah. world of League's Cup, and then you come back, and did you learn a lesson while you were there?
Is it going to be an Orlando wins MLS's back trophy type of moment is what you're saying?
That's right.
Where you blow your load in the thing, and then the season's back up, and you're nowhere to be found.
Seattle won a trophy last year and then stunk it up the rest of the year. Now they're back.
Well, and I was going to say, I would add to your list there a fourth thing, which is who's going to be injured.
That's a great point.
Because it's a lot of soccer in a short amount of time. We've already seen, you know, Gaston Brugman out. I think there's been a couple of other knocks. Like, you do sacrifice something by coming into these tournaments, and as we talked about, like, and it's competitive. So these are not friendlies. In fact, you carry a certain amount of risk going into them, regardless of how far you go. What price did you pay for it?
Just a 13 versus 14 matchup on a Wednesday next month. It's like, you failed and now you're back to me.
Yeah. And there's still a fair amount of season to go. I think it's about 12 games for most teams. So it's a little more than half, but there's still lots to do. Minnesota, for me, I know that I've been on the Minnesota hype train before, but sitting right below the playoff spot, they've got Reynoso back. He looks like he hasn't been away at all, which is astounding. They've brought in some really great players. When I look at their squad right now, their front attacking players, there's a lot to like there. They're one for me that I'm thinking, like, of the teams below the playoff line in the West right now, Minnesota's probably the one. I mean, yes, they're right below it, but I feel like they are the ones most likely to maybe snag that last playoff spot or even go higher. They're kind of a team that I'm watching to see what they do. And then Montreal as well. Yeah. Montreal signed Opoku in a big signing from LAFC. He's looked great right out of the gate. I know Leagues Cup-wise, it hasn't been all roses for them, but they did have that really good performance that they won on penalties. And it's nothing short of astounding when you think of the turnover that Montreal has had from last season to this season. And the squad, they're continuing to build kind of as they go. I have to say, I'm actually pretty impressed with Losada and the way that he's been able to handle this situation. I felt like he really kind of had an impossible task. And given that, I think Montreal continues to outperform at the moment.
Signed a 19-year-old defender from Pachuca. The first MLS Liga MX transfer since the start of the League Cup, which is also something I've had my little eye on.
Yeah, I was wondering that too, of how much cross movement there'd be between those leagues now that all the teams get a much better look at all the players from all the clubs, and the dam has been opened. We'll see if more follows.
This was a prospect, Fernando Alvarez, who apparently only had one Liga MX appearance this year, so it's not like it was a situation where somebody came in and excelled, but like you say, they're putting the pieces together.
Yeah.
I also feel my interest level in, like, goodwill meter rising for Charlotte. They always look like they're having a good time down there.
Yeah, they do. And I know they've been on the wrong end of a number of lopsided games, but you know, when they have their moments, they look pretty good. The atmosphere is fantastic. Yeah, I agree. I think there's something there for them. Even if they don't make the playoffs, I don't think they're a write-off either.
The fingers are crossed. One other thing I think that we hadn't addressed yet is that the MLS All-Star Game happened, and it's basically been a footnote compared to everything else. For all reasons, and also because Arsenal lit them on fire.
Yeah, I really enjoyed last year's both the skills challenge and the MLS All-Star Game. I didn't even watch this All-Star Game because there was just too much going on. But yeah, got lit up 5-0 by Austin Trusty and company from the Arsenal. Sad. The skills challenge was interesting. It's not a design fault. I just felt like last year's was a bit more fun and just better. And this year's, it was way too long. It's turned into the Oscars. It was like a 3.5-hour broadcast. They did bring back goalie wars, and they had goalkeepers from MLS Next competing against each other, which at first I was like, but I want to see Brad Guzan throwing the ball into the net. I actually think was a really great showcase of young talent, and it's nice to see them remembering that there are still other unknowns in MLS that would like some screen time. But yeah, I felt like this year's was a little bit of a footnote.
Here's one question. And before I get off the topic of the All-Star game, I will just say that like 2 years or however many years ago, I wrote that column for Howler about, we just don't need to be bringing in the European teams. Because it's like the storylines and players to celebrate are all like, why don't we just do that among ourselves? Why not just two MLS teams? Why not an MLS team versus I appreciated last year with the two leagues going at it. It's just to bring in a European team runs that risk. It's supposed to be a showpiece. It's supposed to be fun. That it's hard to see how that was fun for anyone other than Arsenal. And,
although it would have been very weird to have Liga MX playing MLS All-Stars and then somebody wins and then everybody goes away and plays each other again through their various clubs. Like, I can see why this season you mixed it up, but I agree. It's like, what did we learn here? What did we achieve?
The next time there is going to be, here's a suggestion. Next time there's going to be a Leagues Cup, which should not be next year. God. Do a Pro Bowl style All-Star game on the weekend of the Leagues Cup final with everyone that's not in the Leagues Cup final.
All right. I'm into it.
Or in the bronze.
What about the two teams that reach the MLS or the Leagues Cup final then have to trade an equal number of players with each other to form two all-star teams made up of Liga MX and MLS All-Stars. Because then wouldn't we really get a better sense of who's truly the best if they have to then reconfigure?
That's right.
And then it's an all MLS / Liga MX affair at the end. And I don't know.
I like all these ideas.
They can be like Team A, Team B. We'll see.
All these are good ideas. The other thing that I had seen is that in the Vancouver Leon penalty shootout, you had each goalkeeper kick 11th. You then also had in the Toluca match a goalkeeper. Their goalkeeper came out to kick a penalty in regular time. Should we? And I sort of think that, like, I was wondering if it's like more of a cultural thing in terms of like a league's just like makeup that it's like. Maybe this is going to open people's eyes to the idea that goalkeepers can take penalties. And who do you want to see as a regular penalty taker that's a goalkeeper in the league? Once this is over, maybe that could be our legacy.
Brad Stuver.
100%. Brad Stuver, let's do it.
Hell yes. I want to see Brad Stuver taking penalties and then go immediately saving penalties. That's the dream world I live in.
Until we reach our utopia of Brad Stuver taking penalties, Where can we find you online?
You can find me online at ThatSoMLS on Instagram. You can also find this podcast at ThatSoMLS.com. And wherever you get your podcasts, please rate, review, and subscribe. It helps us out a ton. Where can we find you?
Please do that. You can find me online at www.team-bates.com. I swear I'll put some content up on there one of those days. You can find me on Threads at Team Batesy. You can find me on Mastodon at teambates@mastodon.online. Because I signed up for one of those things 5 years ago and 6 years ago, and I've used it a handful of times since then, but I am trying to post on there regularly now. So if you're on Mastodon or Threads, look me up.
Sweet.
And until we speak again, don't.
Don't headbutt. Someone in the face.
In the face. Try to avoid it. Don't scream at the referee. There's a whole new handbook of things that you can look up to do to not get sent off.